How do you do a hello without sounding awkward? Hi guys.
Not like that.
Welcome to the Wedding People podcast.
With Rihanna Elizabeth and Rebecca Brennan Brown.
Rebecca and I are wedding and event planners, and we wanted to create a little place that we could talk about the stresses, emotions and process behind planning a wedding.
So if you're planning a wedding, if you're helping someone plan their wedding, or if you just generally are interested and maybe need a bit of help and guidance, then keep listening and I'm sure we will do our best to try and help. In reality though, we might just end up badgering on because that's what we tend to do every single day. So in advance, today's episode is part two of budgets. However, this time we're talking about ways to save money. This isn't about being stingy, it's about how to effectively save a bit here and a bit there. So we hope that you find our tips useful. If you do think this podcast is alright, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We've been so overwhelmed with the number of listeners so far, and every review helps us reach more people. Rihanna and I both have full-time jobs, so we spend our evenings and weekends working on this podcast. That does mean that sometimes the audio comes from Skype calls on a Sunday night, such as this one. But bear with us, the quality will get better as we learn more. So that's enough from me. Here's our latest episode. I really hope you enjoy it.
Would you like to talk about wedding budgets?
Yes, Rihanna, I'd like to talk about wedding budgets.
Oh, good. Let's talk about wedding budgets then.
Where would you like to start?
Well, I think the best place to start would be to discuss how you note down and keep track of your budget.
Very important. Good place to start.
Mm-hmm. I think we're both in agreement when we say that Excel is probably the best place to do it.
Yeah, I agree. A non-complicated Excel document specifically.
Yes, as in don't make it too formula heavy. There's a lot of downloadable wedding budget sheets online, places like Wedding Ideas Mag and weddingguide.co.uk. But personally, I think it's easier to sometimes create something that you find visually easy to look at.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think something that works for you, because even between you and I, when we used to work together, our budget sheets work differently.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of a formula.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not so much.
Yeah. I mean, I think formulas have to be there on certain things. So, for example, if you're having like 100 of something, it's always great to know the quantity rather than just note down the whole amount, because you need to reference to know how many of that item you're going to have. But I just find a budget sheet personally for me that's too formula heavy, a little bit too complicated. I find that simplifying it is better for me visually, but other people are very, very different. Hence why downloadable sheets, yes, they're great as a starting point, but adapt it. The traffic light system, I think, is great, as in red for something that's either been cancelled or something that you need to do, orange, something that you're kind of maybe in deposit stage, and green, something that's confirmed. You know, I think that's always a great way of working.
Yeah, I agree. I do that on event budgets all the time. Really helps me kind of keep track of things. I agree that it doesn't need to be too complicated. All you really need is a column that says what the item is, another column that says who's supplying it, cost, and if you wanted to, you could do excluding and including VAT, depending on how you're paying for things.
Yeah, and I think also what was helpful for me, because I'm in kind of deposit stages of some of the things for my wedding, noting down the dates when your deposit's due and when the final balance is due, because then it just keeps, like, date tracking is also really important. So a lot of people will focus on the cost of the item but not actually say when the payment day is due if it's something that does require a deposit.
Yeah, completely agree. That's so helpful to have the payment dates on there.
Yeah.
100%, that's a really good tip. And don't underestimate the importance of something to track your budget spend. If you think you can do it in your head, you might be a mathematical genius. I am not.
No, I'm definitely not.
I have tried to do it before, of just keeping track. And even for something that might seem really simple to start with, can really, really quickly get out of control with all the information that you need to keep on track of. And
yeah,
all the dates and that sort of thing. So I would really, really recommend getting that from the start. It would just make your life so much more simple.
Mm-hmm. Something that I'm going to do, which I'm annoyed that I haven't because I've already paid my venue deposit, is create or open an account which gives you benefits. So, for example, a credit card that you can pay all of your larger deposits and costs on, and then you get something back. So for example, Virgin credit card gives you back air miles. Every pound you spend, you get an air mile.
Mm-hmm.
Honeymoon, brilliant idea.
Yeah, I think they're great.
Yeah.
And some of them you don't need to spend. I think, so Fraser just got an Amex and he had to spend something like £1,000 in not a short space of time, something that would be quite easy to do when you're planning a wedding and paying out all those kind of payments. And he got loads back for it.
Yeah.
Such a good idea.
Like, didn't you say, are you with House of Fraser? And then you
Yeah, I've got House of Fraser one, so I get store vouchers
back
for spending money with that.
I'm all for something that's going to give you something back when you're spending money.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea. And in, you know, as well as the credit card thing, just having an account that you can keep track of your outgoings.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think that weddings are worth getting into debt for.
No, they're not.
No, no, no.
No, no, no. No, no, no. Okay.
I knew you were going to start singing.
I know, right? So moving on and actually going into how you can save money. There are loads of ways you can save money. And I think we're just going to hit some basics for now and then probably do another one another day.
Yeah. Well, we had to cut the last one short because spoke too much.
I know, we do that. Apologies. Well, I suppose that is the point of a podcast. Otherwise, it'd be pretty boring if there was no speaking.
Aye, but people don't want to sit and listen to us talking for 2 hours. You can tell I've been with Scottish people all weekend. Why don't I just say aye?
Stationery is a good place to start. You know that I love my stationery.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going digital for my save the dates.
No way.
Yep. And in the last episode, I was like, I love something to hold, something physical. And then there she goes, changing to digital. And I'll tell you why. Because it saved me money.
It saved you significant money. I suppose when you add the cost of the actual printing, design time, if you're getting it bespoke, postage, all of those sort of things, I suppose it does save you quite a good chunk.
Yeah, I think it saved about £200. When it comes to stationery, digital will always be much more cost effective than physical invitations. You can get printables online at places like Zazzle or Papier? Again, we said that last time. And Wedding Chicks, for example. Not even just downloadable invites, downloadable place cards and table numbers and table plans. It's always going to be, you know, more cost effective and customize rather than custom. So custom made is bespoke, but customize is you'll go on and adapt something that's already there in a template.
Etsy have some great things like that.
Do they? Okay, good.
Yeah, you can get like, I've done it before for, I think, a bridal party. You can go on and they're like templates of things and you just download it into a Word document or PDF or whatever and you can adapt it. But it means that you get like an amazing quality looking save the date. And some of them are literally like £20.
I didn't even know that Etsy did that.
Yeah, so good. Have a look.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, then you've got DIY, which, just a warning with DIY, yes, it can be cost effective, but sometimes, depending on what you buy, because you can end up spending an absolute fortune in hobbycraft, you then actually find out that you could probably have done it more cost effectively in a different way. So always be careful with DIY. Yes, in hindsight, it would probably save you money, but it can get a little bit crazy with buying all of the different things that you need to get. If you have something quite basic, but if you want something with like butterflies and kind of glitter things and Swarovski crystals, then you're looking at probably spending more on DIY than you would with, you know, a stationery designer.
Yeah, so I suppose don't assume that that's going to be the cheapest.
Yeah.
Because you're 100% right. A template or something you can find online and email to people will definitely be cheaper than that.
Yeah, exactly. And ditching your RSVP cards and putting on a email address or phone number will save you having to pay for RSVP cards and save them having to post them back to you.
I don't know about you, but I'd lose all that paper.
Yeah, but I mean, I do love a bit of... I do love
stationery. I know you do.
Soz. I am going physical for my invites and RSVPs though. But I did, the reason I'm doing that is because now I'm saving money on the save the dates.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It all kind of goes back to that, what we've discussed before about your priorities and what your priorities are. So yeah. You've just had to make a little sacrifice so you can have what you really want. And that's kind of what it's all about. One of my main points, like overarching points for everything that we're talking about today, is being flexible.
Yeah.
And if you can just be a little bit flexible, you'll find that you can probably save money. But if you've got this vision in your head and it has to be like that, then you probably will have to pay for it to be like that.
Exactly. Place cards as well. I did a little party at home, and usually a place card, a printed place card with a stationery designer, is between what, 80p to £1.50?
Yeah, something like that.
I literally brought a wad of 50 for 60p and hand wrote them. You can, if you've got nice handwriting, or if you know someone with nice handwriting, don't pay to get them printed, just make them yourself. So instead of having individual menus, having one large menu.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that again for your order of service. So rather than have individual printouts, just mm-hmm. one big kind of, either do it on a chalkboard, or you can do, you know, writing on the mirror, or just literally just having a big, large printable template. Just saves you doing individuals for everybody.
Do people care about orders of service anymore?
I'm having them.
Are you?
Yeah. But I've actually just realised that while I'm having this conversation with you, I've realised that I don't really need an order of service because I've got a very short ceremony.
If you've got a short ceremony that's not got tons of readings and tons of hymns and that sort of thing, I think church weddings are suited for order of service.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I genuinely don't think you need them.
I'm paying £5 order of service book.
Yeah, don't bother.
That's a lot. That's like 450 quid.
What's in it?
I don't know. I can't believe I didn't even think about that. I'm not even having... My cousin's doing the ceremony. We're not having any hymn. Someone might do a small reading, but I don't need a £4.50, £5 thing for that. I've just thought, oh, wow.
Yes.
This podcast is really good. Done.
Done. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to say on stationery?
No, I think that's the main points I'd like to talk about.
Would you like to talk about flowers?
I would always like to talk about flowers.
So something I have done, or something I quite like to do for events with smaller budgets, particularly since greenery has been this massive thing,
mm-hmm.
is use more foliage and less blooms, because blooms will always be more expensive. So actual flowers themselves will always be more expensive than foliage. And you can create some amazing arrangements and displays and all sorts of different things using foliage alone. So that, I think, is a good money-saving tip.
I completely agree. Blooms will always be more expensive unless it's an expensive foliage, such as eucalyptus.
True.
Things that trend also go up in cost. But most of the time, you can ask your florist. Always ask your florist. Because if you send a mood board over with big, you know, garden roses and peonies and orchids and all of this kind of thing, they will take that is what you want. And then you'll get this bill and you'll think, what? That's so expensive. So show them what you like and then say, what's going to be in season? Because flowers outside of season are always going to be more expensive. And what's an alternative that looks like this flower that could possibly be more cost effective?
Yeah, I think that's a really good tip. Sort of saying to your florist, this is the look I'm trying to achieve, but I'm not bothered about the particular flowers, if that's the case. If you really want peonies, tell them you really want peonies. But if you can, again, be flexible, tell them that, and I'm sure they'll come up with some alternatives.
Yeah, a good florist will always do that, and they'll want to help you at the end of the day, because if they're too much money, you're not going to use them anyway. So it's in their best interest. I'm going to reference my amazing friends Jake and Emma a couple of times in this podcast, because they had the most beautiful wedding and they used dried flowers, which they ordered online. And then they created all of their floral arrangements in advance because they didn't have to worry about time due to them already being dried.
That's cute.
It was so lovely. It was a lovely barn wedding and they just had these gorgeous arrangements. And they even made their top table arrangement. It was so lovely.
It's a good idea, that.
Yeah, good idea.
There's a place near me that I'm absolutely obsessed with. Because I'm obsessed with flowers, that you can go and pick your own flowers. And I've known brides, honestly, it's amazing. It's just like fields and fields of flowers. It's just beautiful. And again, if you're not so, you can't be like that particular one, I want this flower.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted that, you have to go to a flower market. But if you're not really bothered about what in particular you're looking for, mm-hmm. it's such a good alternative. Go and pick your own. It's so cheap. For like a massive bucket, you fill it up with as much as you can get in it for something like £15. And you can definitely get enough for a bouquet out of one, two.
I love it.
But
What's the name of the place?
It's called Blooming Green.
Blooming Green.
It's just outside Maidstone in Kent.
You just save so much money. So the dried flower company is called Artisan Dried Flowers. And I'm just looking at their beautiful bouquets now. And they're around £20 for this beautiful collection, or like a little posy. It's beautiful. Mm. Check them out. They're great.
Did you say Emma and Jake?
Emma and Jake.
I'm stalking them on your blog now.
Yeah, they're on my blog. I've got a little, if you go into my real wedding section on my blog, you'll see their whole wedding. And at the end is a link to their suppliers. And the photographer, actually, of this wedding is going to be my photographer.
That bouquet is so cute.
Yeah, so you can buy them pre-made, or you can just buy the petals and you can do whatever you want.
I love that. I'm not going to lie, when you said dried flowers, I was a bit like, oh, don't know how that would look. But I love that.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Beautiful. I know. The one thing I would say, though, particularly with the pick-your-own thing, is don't underestimate a florist's skills.
Oh, my God.
Like, if you're a bit creative in that field and you're happy with it looking wild and, like, not so, what would you call it? Like,
structured?
Designed, yeah. I suppose. Then go for it. But I was not good at that. I am not meant to be a florist.
Same. My mum and dad's 60th last year, they had a joint 60th party that I did a surprise for them. I went and brought loads of hydrangea heads to put in fish bowls, because that's like really, really quite cost effective to just get loads of big hydrangea heads. I put like 5 in a bowl and they just like opened out and collapsed. Really, really hard to flower arrange. So please be sure that you try to do that before you go down there. I can just go and pick some flowers and put them into an arrangement, because it's not easy.
No, don't underestimate that.
Please don't. Can you imagine? Everyone, go and get your own flowers. It's really easy. And then they're like, what the hell am I doing?
Oh, it's not. I just hack at them with scissors. I'm like, yeah, all they do is cut the ends off and stick them in a vase. No.
No, no. It's so not. Not like that.
That's not a thing. Another thing on flowers that I have to say is arches are quite popular at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quoting for about 6 arches at the moment.
Are you?
Yeah. People love an arch. One's a chip arch, which is quite nice. Yeah. And then, like, there's the full ones that are full of stuff that you kind of see everywhere on Pinterest and all that sort of thing. Arches cost a fortune.
Mm-hmm, they do. Yeah, I'm not doing any at the moment. I don't think I've done anything in the last 6 months in regards to arches.
You've just got to think about how much goes into that.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of work. And bear in mind, a florist cost will be, I think it's a third of their cost of their labour. Which is fair enough. You just got to think about how much work goes into these things. But what I'm finding is a really good alternative if you want that sort of aesthetic of an arch, is because they give quite a nice focal point at the end of an aisle. Quite a nice alternative is to do a half arch, or maybe a corner.
Lovely. A semi arch.
Yeah. And they look really good. I've seen some really cool ones recently. Florist I know does one on a driftwood arch. That's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one on, it was a copper, almost like copper piping.
Lovely.
That was really lovely. And then it could be quite delicate as well, the flowers on top of it. So that was really nice. I think just be creative.
I think we want a wedding backdrop, because we've got down our ceremony aisle at the back, it's a white wall. At the moment, it has kind of like an LED curtain, which we'd like to remove and add something in. And I really quite like the kind of floral curtains, but nothing very bloom heavy, because it can get very expensive. But again, going back to like my love for carnations, which I mentioned before, that they're very good for hanging and pinning. So I'm thinking of having maybe like a carnation kind of curtain backdrop. So that's always an alternative as well. If you don't want to go too bloom heavy, which is expensive, is to create kind of string floral curtains. And all you have to do is Google that to see what I'm talking about. Sometimes it's hard to describe what you're talking about on a podcast.
Carnations are great for curtains as well. Really good. And the other thing that I forgot to say on arches, if you can put wheels on it, or get your florist to kind of hang around until your ceremony's over and move it, you can repurpose it as a photo booth, kind of photo opportunity thing.
Perfect.
which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I actually had down here using flowers from your ceremony and then moving to your reception space. Mm-hmm. So recycling the flowers that you use at the first half of your wedding into the second half of your wedding, if that's doable, if you're in the same kind of location and your florist has already left, enlist the help of your bridal party or your groomsmen to step in and just do something if it's easily manoeuvrable.
Completely agree. I've seen it at weddings before where they've recycled like the fireplace arrangement from the ceremony and then made it into the top table arrangement for the dinner.
Yep.
And just wherever you can kind of get away with reusing things.
Love it. Do you know another thing that I think is really, really cute, top table arrangements, if you're having a top table, is having little vases placed in just in front of the bride and groom, and then having your bridal, your bridesmaids arrangements placed in them.
Ah,
yeah, it's cute, isn't it? So like there's that. Like a little vase of water just sitting there ready, and then as the girls come in, they'll just place the floral arrangements into the little empty vases, and then that's your top table arrangement.
I really like that.
Isn't that cute?
Really cute.
Yeah.
Right, well, that was a lovely chat about flowers.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it?
What would you like to talk about now?
Why don't we move on to wedding dresses?
Okay.
I'm going wedding dress shopping this Saturday. First time. I'm very nervous. I'm
excited for you.
Thank you. And first thing on saving money with wedding dresses, I'm going to say is pre-owned. I never expected to be someone who would buy a pre-owned dress, but looking on bride2bride.co.uk, as in bride, the number two bride, they've got some great dresses that have either been worn once or have been brought and then not wanted and then have the tags on. And they've got everything from, you know, Jenny Packham gowns to Maggie Sotero, Maury Lee. There's loads of massive brands and names on here and massive designers. There's just the third of a price, if not less. It's a great idea. If you're not fussed about wearing something else that somebody's already had, then I think it's a great, you know, even pre-owned weddingdresses.com is great.
I think it's a great idea. I don't know. I don't have an issue with the wearing something that's already been worn thing, so much so that I would wear a rented wedding dress, I think.
Yes, you can rent the gowns.
I don't think I would have an issue with doing that at all. Because let's be honest, it's going to sit in the cupboard for the rest of your life, which is like a lovely momentum to have. And at the end of the day, what most people do, it's just not something that's important to me.
Personally. I'm not going to sit in the cupboard. I'm going to sit in it every day. Literally, that scene from Friends, that is me. I'm just going to sit on the sofa eating Doritos in my wedding dress. Crying because my wedding day is over.
You're gonna grub that one up and all.
Oh, I grubbed my mum's wedding dress up when I was a kid because I used to dress up in it all the time with my like 5-year-old baby hands, like snotty, just wearing her wedding dress around the house. Oh, I did. My mum, I know. Because aren't you looking at possibly wearing your mum's dress? Because you said that she's got a gorgeous gown.
It's gorgeous in part. She's aware of this. If I would take it, I would cut off the sleeves. They're some hella 90s meringue sleeves. I love a sleeve too, but they basically like, okay, how can I describe this? It's an off the shoulder dress with a full length sleeve, but it puffs to the elbow and then it's like elastic in again.
Yeah.
And then it puffs again to the wrist.
It put a double
elastic
puff.
In.
Oh, and you've got to send me a picture of this dress. Oh.
I'll send you a picture of it. But it basically, like, the sleeves need to go.
But I love that, using your mum's dress or even using it like a family heirloom dress. I love that.
Yeah, it's cute. I really like the Oxfam have got a chain of wedding shops and they quite often get dresses which are last season and haven't been bought from sample sales, so you can get like Vera Wang wedding dresses from Oxfam.
Yeah,
it's good. Amazing. And on the motion of renting and secondhand, I think it's definitely worth checking eBay and Facebook Marketplace for any kind of little bits and bobs that you might need to get. Because let's be honest, most people only use their stuff once. And I've bought stuff for weddings and events before off of Facebook Marketplace that people had used for their wedding 10 years ago. Put them back in the box. Like I bought 10 candelabras a little while ago that someone used for their wedding, put them back in the box, put them in the loft, and they sold them 10 years later when they were moving house. And they were in like pristine condition.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth checking these places before you fork out for something that you're never going to use again.
I think that's also great, like moving on to, you know, buying and reselling. I'm going to reference Jake and Emma again, who brought all of the vintage crockery and like decorative bits such as a little bar and a chair and stools and rugs. And then they literally just sold everything off in like bulk on eBay after.
Mm.
So it's good to invest and go to kind of like antique markets, obviously depending on the style that you're looking for. But just if you have the time and you have the space to store it, shop around, buy it and then sell it. You can sell anything.
Yeah, we went to an antiques market a couple of weeks ago to try and find stuff for the house. And it's just like it was a really nice day out.
Oh, I love a boot sale.
Yeah,
I love a boot sale in an antique market, me.
Yeah. That would be quite fun, spending the run-up to your wedding, going out and doing those things. It gives you a bit of time together.
Yeah. Be careful of the antique shops, though, because when we've been into, like, the antique shops in the little villages, they can be well pricey.
Yeah.
I do. We are old. I do love an antique shop. I love looking at all the glassware.
Yeah, same.
And the tea sets. Okay.
Are we done on second-hand renting?
Yeah, we can move on to catering.
Got lots of things on my catering list.
Yeah, same. You go first, mate.
My first one just says chicken, because I feel like we talk about it all the time.
Mine says chicken.
It's got no context. It just says chicken.
Same.
I feel like we discuss this a lot, but because our priorities are different, we've got very different opinions on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do the full 3-course sit-down meal, there are certain things that are going to cost you more than others.
Yes.
So, for example, we've spoken about this before. I'm not sure on a podcast yet, but you can get a starter of something like a tomato soup or melon balls, or it's usually melon balls or parma ham or something like that, followed by a chicken dish, followed by, what are the desserts? Like cheesecake.
Cheesecake or a lemon cake, you know, like a lemon tart or something like that.
Yeah. Basically something that can be mass produced.
Eat and mess.
Yeah. You can get all that sort of stuff, which is your standard lower end of the budget menu, for cheaper than you would be able to get something that you have to have lots of specialist ingredients for, that needs lots of cooking processes and is more difficult to make. Now, we stand very differently on this, in that I am totally happy with the lower end of the budget. No fuss. Give me a bit of melon and a bit of chicken. And I mean, you.
Yeah, mate. I mean, yeah. But I mean, I love a bit of. I mean, I don't eat meat, but I love melon and I'm not fussy. But we're big foodies. So I think if you're foodies, you're more inclined to spend more money on your food. Mm-hmm. So, Fraz, you'll spend more money on your band than I will. But I'll spend more money on my catering than you will, which is just because of, again, our priorities.
Yeah, exactly. I really don't think there's anything wrong with the fact that you'll be spending more money on that.
No.
It's just not what's important to me.
Mm.
I'm looking forward to your food, though. Your food will be better than my food.
Well, no, but this is the thing.
I'm aiming for barely edible. Not barely. Like, edible is my goal.
But there are so many ways that you can, like, again, it really comes down to your meat as well. If you're having a meat menu, chicken is going to be more cost effective, pork as well, then lamb and beef. It's just obvious things like that. And going back to starters, something like melon and parma ham is going to be much more cost effective than something like crab or scallop or scallop or whatever you want to call it. But
Do you know, I don't know if that is obvious, you know.
Yeah, maybe you're not. Unless you're massive foodies and into that kind of thing, you probably wouldn't think about it initially. But it has so much of an impact, because you usually have like menu A, B and C. Mm-hmm. And then you can see the ingredients change between those menus.
Yeah. And it's obvious, isn't it, that something with truffle and caviar is going to cost you more money. So you just kind of have to think about it logistically, in that sense of, what does it need to be made? What process does it have to go through? Are there a crap ton of ingredients in it? Is it going to, like, because obviously if a chef can mass produce something, bung it in an oven and serve it, it's going to need less force than it will if you're having pastry made from scratch and like all that kind of stuff.
Like a beef Wellington.
Yeah, but, exactly. Beef Wellington. Hey,
Caviar and truffle at a wedding. That's a fancy pants wedding, that. Nice. Well,
see you in 2020.
You ain't getting no caviar and truffle.
Right, well, I'm not coming in.
The lottery. Yeah, so looking at, away from the 3 to 5 course meals, avoiding sit-down meals is something that people are doing in regards to, like, standing bowl foods or trucks, you know, food trucks. Be careful of those, because if you have a lot, they can be more, you know, expensive sometimes. Picnics, afternoon teas, barbecues, hog roast.
I think that's the route that I'll go down, because my food taste is very kind of, I like a lot of things. Like, if I go to Nando's, I'm having 5 sides.
Oh.
Like, I like all the things. I want a bit of everything. So I think going down that food truck kind of thing will allow me to do that.
Yeah.
Which I love. Burrito bar. I want pulled pork. I want all the food.
But also, canapes can easily be scrapped. You know, don't think that in your, you know, drinks reception that you have to serve canapes, because you don't. You can do like nibbles instead, like do like olives and peanuts, and, you know, people will pick, or have substantial canapes, like bigger canapes, and then remove your starter so that you remove a course.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. Scrap your dessert and serve your wedding cake.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of caterers or venues will serve your cake and plate it all for free. Yeah. So brilliant.
Speaking of cakes, are you still getting a Colin?
Colin the Caterpillar from M&S.
Is that still the plan?
I think it's still heavily in discussion. The cake is giving me all kinds of stress, Rebecca.
Why?
Because...
Listen to that sentence.
I know. So this is
a... Cake is anti-anxiety. It's literally made to not give you anxiety.
Yeah, well, last week I was saying to you that I couldn't give a crap about the cake. And now literally all I'm hallucinating and dreaming is cake.
All right. What's going on?
So originally... I looked at a fancy pants cake and then realised no. And then we discussed Colin the Caterpillars, which we still love. And now we found a cake that we love, the look of, but it's massively over our budget. So at the moment, we're just thinking, what the hell? See, it happens. You go crazy over certain elements all of a sudden.
Yeah. Can you fake the cake?
Yeah. So faking the cake is polystyrene foam. What is it? It's polystyrene, right?
Polystyrene, yeah.
It's very common, and especially when I work in the luxury market and you see these big, huge 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 tiered cakes, they're all fake. 90% of the time, they're all fake, with a cutting wedge or a cutting slab within the cake. And it's cheaper.
It's clever.
It's clever. They'll have a cutting cake in the kitchen, serve that to the guests, done.
Yeah.
Fake it.
Like it.
Fake the cake.
Yeah, definitely fake the cake.
But for me, the most important thing over design is flavour, because a lot of people don't eat the cake at weddings or take it home. And I will pick a cake that tastes better over a cake that looks better.
Okay.
And I'm going to be honest, right? I've had a lot of cake, but Colin the Caterpillar from Marks and Spencer's tastes better than a lot of cakes that I've had at weddings.
I think Colin's a great idea.
There are other cakes available. Like, Marks and Spencer's do a great range of wedding cakes.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we know that you're not sponsored by Marks and Spencer's, hon. That sentence was like, other cakes are available.
You can get... Hang on, I'm going to say you can get them from Waitrose, but everyone tells me off calling it... It's Waitrose, right?
If you're from Essex.
Oh. It's Waitrose or Waitrose. Waitrose. Whatever. Anyway. They do cakes too. Moving back onto designer cakes, I worked with Rosalind Miller, and they also, that she's quite an expensive cake designer, I would say. And she also has an online kind of ready to order cake. So if you're looking for something a little bit more fancy, but you don't really have the budget, looking at major designers in London, some of them do have ready to order cakes that you can pick from.
Yeah, you were telling me that some are, you can get some from Harrods or something.
I think it was Rosalind Miller. I know that GC Couture do it as well, I believe. But you can kind of buy, for example, on Rosalind Miller's website, you can get her cakes from £79.50 for like one tier and moving up to like £195 for two.
Mm-hmm.
But then you don't even have to have a cake. These days you can have donuts or get your friends and family to bake kind of like your sweet treats. I'm getting really excited about this discussion on cake and sweet things.
Right,
I think we've gone on tangents here.
Yeah, I'm going to throw in my last point on catering, which is...
Sorry.
It's okay. You're allowed. I'm also passionate about cake. It's understandable.
Okay.
My last point on catering, a lot of people like to do a cocktail for the wedding to just break up the bar from beer and wine, which I appreciate. As a wedding guest, I appreciate a cocktail on that menu a lot.
I do.
It just gets a bit heavy drinking wine all day, doesn't it?
I get a bad headache in the morning.
Yeah, not good. So if you're going to have a cocktail, obviously cocktails are expensive because a lot of ingredients go into them. A lot of work goes into them. So if you have something that you can pre-mix, it's going to bring the cost down for you. So mojitos can be pre-mixed. Anything that you've ever seen in a mason jar with a tap on the bottom, like that kind of thing. Pims, maybe they're not proper cocktails, but something like that will really keep the cost down.
Continuing the drinks thing, because I think this is really important. Corkage is massive, right?
I can't believe I forgot that.
Yeah, well, for example, providing your own alcohol is always going to be more cost effective than buying it from the venue, because venues and caterers will always mark their alcohol up. That asking for corkage, as in what they charge, is always helpful. However, it's usually a lot of money. Around what, £10 a bottle?
Yeah, so it works in two different ways. So what you'll find is what I've found in the past is a venue will charge you a corkage fee for them to serve the alcohol, bring it into the venue, or that sort of thing.
And cover the cost of not using their alcohol, because that's where they get a lot of their profit.
Yeah, exactly. So venues do it that way, whereas a catering company will charge you a bottle handling fee, which is always less. So that might be like £4 a bottle, and that's just simply for them to hold the bottle, serve it, sort of thing.
Dispose of it.
Yeah. And I mean, in reality, there's not actually that much difference. I just find that venues and hotels tend to use the word corkage, whereas caterers will use the word bottle handling, and they're basically the same thing.
Yeah, and hotels, I would say, are probably the worst for marking up in regards to hotels will mark up the most usually. And I think if you're going to provide a bottle of, you know, cost effective but good wine, it usually ranges between £4 and £7. And if you add your corkage of around 10, you usually end up spending the same amount of money that you would have at the venue or caterer anyway. So then you don't actually end up saving yourself money unless you can persuade your venue or caterer to waiver the fee. For example, our venue don't charge corkage.
Yeah, that's good of them.
So good. And they're very, you know, they make that a point when you talk with them in, you know, your negotiations with them and your meetings with them. And they just request that in the evening you spend a certain amount at the bar, or you put them out behind the bar, which is actually a reasonable price of £500.
Yeah. And I mean, I know caterers who have been very reasonable about it in the past, because they kind of know that the corkage fee is what's going to make or break the budget. But equally, I've worked in venues that charge £75 a bottle corkage fee. So if you're going to bring in a bottle of wine that costs £7, they're going to charge you £75 to do it.
That is
obviously no point.
Yeah, this is true.
But sometimes it is worth it, like if you're buying in high quantity, and like some caterers' prices don't start for less than £20, particularly if you're down my way, Kent kind of way, or someone that's not too far from, you can just nip over the channel on a booze cruise and you can pick up wine for significantly less from Calais. And I know quite a few couples that have done that and saved themselves a fortune.
Yeah, it, like you said, make or break in the budget. If it's a case of you confirming the venue, if it's reasonable, and, you know, the likelihood of a hotel wavering their corkage fee is not very likely. Asking is always the most important thing, because you never know. But if it's a case of you booking the venue, if they waver the cost of the corkage, they might do it. Usually they do it.
Yeah. I'm aware we've been speaking for a long time. I might just do some quick fire venue points.
Go on.
So I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've actually went for a meeting with someone the other day who got married in an Airbnb.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I saw it popping up on Facebook the other day, actually, of a couple of brides who've done it, that apparently there's a tick box on Airbnb that says, like, allows events or something like that.
Yes.
I've never seen it, but you can, so that this lady I was speaking to the other day, she held her wedding for 100 odd people at an Airbnb, and it saved a fortune.
I feel like I did know this, because I did this for a hen party, and Airbnb won't really let you do a hen party if you make it very obvious.
Yeah, but this, like, she showed me the pictures, and she got this completely beautiful, ornate house, really traditional, and it was just stunning. And she paid, like, a fraction of what you would pay for a venue. Then obviously she had to sort out, it then becomes like a dry hire venue where you have to sort out getting the caterers in and putting the marquee in the garden or whatever it might be. And it becomes a little bit more work, but it will save you a ton of money. So I thought that was really good. We've said it before about either get married on a weekday or in an evening. I know a few people that have got married in the evenings, which I think is really sweet. That can save you a bit of money as well if you take like an evening slot at a venue. I know someone who got married at the Roman Bath in Bath. And she had an evening slot, and because a lot of it was outside, it was dark and she had loads of candles. It was beautiful. It was just so nice. So definitely consider that.
Beautiful can have you. I was going to say, evening ceremonies are great because you don't have to worry about paying for food in the day and drinks receptions in the day and, you know, all of that fancy stuff.
Yeah, cut it all out.
Cut it out.
Yeah. My second to last point on venue is getting somewhere that needs little decor. So a venue that is really beautiful just in itself, in its architecture or whatever it might be, that you don't need to dress so much. That will obviously save you money in decor. Anything to add?
Yeah, so barn weddings can generally be more cost effective, as well as just dry hire venues in general. But always be careful and try and do some kind of estimated costs before. Because if you have to bring in all of your suppliers, sometimes those costs can creep up quite quickly.
Definitely. And my last point on venues is minimum spend.
Yeah.
I like a minimum spend.
Minimum. Venue. You went minimum.
Yeah. Oh. I love a minimum. Did I do it again? I can't say minimum now.
Minimum.
Now I'm saying it funny because Rihanna keeps telling me I can't say it. I like a minimum spend venue.
Okay.
Because I think it feels like you're getting more for your money. So basically, just to explain, it means that when you go to a venue, instead of them saying it's going to cost you $7,000 to hire this venue or whatever that figure might be, they'll say we need you to spend an absolute minimum of $20,000 or something like that. So the number's normally higher, but it just means you have to spend that money. So rather than your $7,000 that you're getting nothing for, you're spending the full 20. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so that will include catering, drinks, everything, waiting staff if that's not included. Just basically you're getting all of your catering and venue for just one big price.
Yeah. It's always more cost effective.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say on venue. There were some quick fire things. Do you want to quick fire any things or do you want to detail any things?
I would like to quick fire some things myself.
Go on, Em.
I'm going to quick fire the fact that stamps need to be allowed for. Mm-hmm. If you're having physical stationery and you're sending them out, stamps will cost you a fortune. I think for around 100, a book of stamps is around $69.99 because I checked that myself recently. So be mindful of stamps and postage. When it comes to your bridesmaids, looking on places like ASOS and Topshop and any high street shop is usually a lot more cost effective than going to a bridal boutique, or giving your bridesmaids a budget. So you say, right, I'm giving you all £80 and this is the style that I want you to kind of look at. And if they want to put some more money into it themselves, they can. That's their decision. You don't necessarily have to get all of the bridesmaids' hair and makeup done because it can cost a fortune. Maybe just provide them with like accessories and kind of products such as an eyeshadow palette and, you know, get their own like little makeup tool set for them. Save you a lot of money, and a lot of them will be happy to do it themselves. I always find that if you are going to pay for something for your bridesmaids, hair is probably better because people tend to really know their face and can do their own makeup.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, so my bridesmaids are getting their hair done, but they're not. I'm not paying for them to get their makeup done because the costs are just too much, especially when you have 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disposable cameras when it comes to taking photos. Still old school, but still great. Or getting a Polaroid camera. Being mindful, though, that Polaroids, the little expensive. Printable, they're really expensive. So be mindful of those. And sign up for deals. Just look at a wedding website, sign up. And then sometimes they'll be like 10% off or, you know, 200 quid off your dress if you spend this amount of money. Just sign up for everything.
I had a bride once that entered herself into all the competitions because she was like, well, if I don't win, I don't win. But if I do, it's a good day. So I thought it was a really good attitude.
Yeah. There's a bride that I know who has won her stationery and also personal training through websites and their competitions. Yeah.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Final thoughts?
Final thoughts. There are so many different ways to spend money, but I think we've covered quite a good selection so far.
Yeah. I think the thing that I really want to bring home to people is think about where you're going to get impact and value for your money. So I would spend more money dressing the areas that people are going to be in more often. For example, if someone's going to go for an hour's drinks reception out of your whole day and they're never going to go back there, don't spend too much money dressing that. Mm-hmm. Think about what people are really going to see. Are you going to be better off doing one big thing rather than lots of little things? Those kind of thought processes.
Yeah, like statement pieces rather than loads of tiny things.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I really recommend is telling your suppliers your budget when you're contacting them. I know personally just from experience of people contacting me for wedding planning purposes, it's really helpful for your suppliers to have your budget because then they'll be able to adapt what they can do to fit in your budget most of the time. Or they might just be completely honest and say, really sorry, can't work with you on this one, but so-and-so can. I think it's just important that you're honest and most people will try and work with you on that.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on guest list because guest list has a massive impact for your budget. But I do honestly feel like guest list is a completely different episode on its own. But obviously, the more people you have, the more money it's going to cost you.
The number one thing on my list on ways to save money is cut numbers. We'll do a whole episode on guest list because someone's getting stressed.
I'm getting stressed. Oh, it's so hard. It's so sensitive. I've got 3 very close friends who are getting married in the next year and they are having exactly the same process. And as planners, it's not something we really get involved with in regards to the invitations. So we hear that, yes, it can be stressful, but doing it yourself is a real deal. It is, oh my God, that person's invited me to their wedding. Now I've got to invite them to mine. And oh, but then they've got partners and this and that. And oh, so we will dedicate this. But obviously number crunching is going to have a massive impact on how many people you have at your wedding.
Yeah, definitely.
When it comes to, so just giving you a very short bit of information, I think create your ideal guest list. And then create your realistic guest list.
Ooh. We shall discuss that more, Rihanna.
We shall, Rebecca.
Have you got anything else to say about saving money?
Nah, I think I'm done for the day. Right. Super tired. I'm aware that I've got a tiramisu in the other room that I haven't finished.
Okay, well, thanks for talking to me about budgets.
Thanks for talking to me about budgets, Rebecca. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Wedding People podcast. Rihanna and I would like this podcast to be as interactive as possible. So if there's anything you want to say or anyone you think we should know about, please get in touch via Instagram at The Wedding People Podcast or email us at theweddingpeoplepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again and we hope you can join us for our next episode.